So we hear right at the beginning of that first reading that God put Abraham to the test. This is the last of 10 trials in the life of Abraham. And in this story, the Jewish term for test actually means to raise a banner. In other words, Abraham is going to be exalted through the test. You know, think about it. When we send a delegation to the Olympics amidst the pageantry of the opening ceremonies, what is one of the greatest honors one can have? To carry the flag of one's homeland, to carry the banner. And so we identify Abraham with this trial more than any other. This is his banner trial, proclaiming faithfulness to God. And here's one of the reasons why. Because our translation says, take your son Isaac. But actually looking at a couple of different Jewish translations gives us a different perspective. One of them says, pray, take your son. Another one says, please take your son. This is actually a request from God, that Abraham has a choice in the matter. Isaac is the child of the promise. And so by putting Isaac in God's hand, Abraham is putting the fulfillment of the promise squarely in the hands of God. But it's not just Abraham who has great faith. It is also Isaac. Part of the first reading that was kind of omitted to keep the reading short talks about how Isaac carried the wood for the sacrifice up the mountain. Right, that's a very important detail because Isaac is not a small boy if he can carry that much wood up a mountain. And according to the Jewish rabbis, Isaac was about 25 years of old, at least, which means Abraham was at least 125. This means Isaac is strong enough to overpower his father if he wants to. Isaac is carrying the banner as well. Abraham and Isaac put everything in God's hands because there is no safer place. They understood what St. Paul would write 2,000 years later. If God is for us, who can be against us? Abraham and Isaac had choices, and so do we. The Bible tells us that the place where that sacrifice occurred, that Abraham would call that place Yahweh Yireh, which means the Lord will see. And so we have the angel saying to Abraham, I know now how devoted you are to me. The same is true for us. God knows how devoted we are to him, or how devoted we aren't to him. And so Abraham has this banner. The question then is, what is our banner? The transfiguration of Jesus in our gospel points to the answer. In the book of Exodus, when Moses appeared before the Israelites, after having been on the mountain with God, his face was transfigured, giving witness that he had had an intimate encounter with God. But our gospel tells us that the entire person of Jesus was transfigured. Literally, the word is metamorphosis. Jesus appeared to them as he would appear at his resurrection. Divine light radiating from every part of his body. Because Jesus doesn't just have intimacy with God. Jesus is God. This is my beloved Son. Listen to him. This is our banner. God became man to save us. Yes, Jesus is God. It's what we celebrate every Christmas. You know, God became man, as it says in John's gospel, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we saw his glory, the glory as of the only Father, Son. However, we have to be careful not to over-spiritualize Jesus as putting him somewhere far away from us, because he is also man. And that's why John begins his first epistle with these beautiful words. He says, what was from the beginning, what we have heard, what we have seen with our eyes, what we have touched with our hands, concerns the very word of life. What we're saying is that Mary and Joseph held the Son of God in their arms. The apostles ate and drank and lived with the Son of God. The leaders of the people had God killed. And as was foreshadowed in the Transfiguration, Jesus rose from the dead with a glorious body filled with divine light. I'm afraid that we're so familiar with these facts that we've forgotten that this is incredibly good news. This is the banner that we've been given to carry in the world. This is the flag of our heavenly homeland. The Transfiguration, the countless miracles of Jesus, and the resurrection are given to us as touchstones to remind us that God did more than just reveal himself through the law and the prophets. He came as a human being. He united his humanity to our divinity, our humanity to his divinity. Jesus was raised from the dead so that one day we too might share in that resurrection. If that isn't a banner worth raising, I don't know what is. That is the banner, but the question before us today is, will it be our banner? If we want to experience hope, if we want our families to rise above this despairing world, then we have to recommit ourselves to taking up this banner. Because this banner is about what God has done for us. It's not about what human beings have done for God. This is about what God is doing for us. And because of this, life has meaning, and we were created for a glorious end. With such good news, how come, though, we have to convince ourselves to take up the banner? Because we know that the world is going to shoot arrows at us. Just as it wasn't always easy for Abraham to lift his banner, so we will be tempted to hide that banner. We will be tempted to run from the battle. You know, up on the mountain, Peter said, "Rabbi, it's good that we are here." He's having this mountaintop experience. In our lives, we get these glimpses of God, and then his presence seems to elude us. One minute, Jesus is transfigured, and then the next minute, all they see is his humanity. Just like Peter, we want to grasp and we want to always possess that profound experience of Jesus in this life. But God's way is to give us glimpses and then challenge us to imitate the faith of Abraham. We will have opportunities to say to God, "Now I know how devoted you are to me." That God will say to us, based on the banner that we raise, "Now I know how devoted you are to me." Of course, we know that the disciples fled from the Garden of Gethsemane and abandoned Jesus when the authorities came to arrest him, because the disciples did not yet have the benefit of the resurrection to understand the banner that they were to carry. But after the Pentecost, nothing would ever stop them. And why is that? There are two reasons. First, the resurrection unfurled the banner. Jesus is the Son of God and man who came to save us. The second is that after the Pentecost, after receiving the Holy Spirit, they understood what St. Paul would write in that second reading. If God is for us, who can be against us? God is for us. It is not our job to save the world. Jesus already did it. But it is our mission to be faithful to the task that's being entrusted to us, to march next to Jesus, and to raise the banner that's being given to us. Yes, the arrows are going to fly, but they are not enough to separate us from the love of God. A few verses after our second reading, Paul writes, "I am convinced that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor present things, nor future things, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor any other creature will be able to separate us from the love that is in Jesus Christ." We can be secure. We can be certain because God's love is stronger than death. If God was willing to hand over his son to death, if he was willing to provide the lamb spoken of in the first reading, why would he reject us when we entrust ourselves to him? He will give us everything we need to carry that banner gloriously of our heavenly homeland. It's the banner revealed in the Transfiguration that God became man in Jesus Christ to save us. This is the banner. Will it be our banner? If we want hope in the world, we will raise it up again. God gives us that same Holy Spirit that he gave the apostles at the Pentecost. My prayer for you is that we will follow the Father's advice. Listen to him. I pray that at the end of every day, as you make an examination of conscience, you will hear Jesus say, "Thank you. Now I know how devoted you are to me."